Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 21st of February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, we're delighted to say we are joined today by Mark Anderson from American Free Press and Truthhound blog. And we've also got Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group. So quite a packed news today.
We'll get straight on with it then. Mark, American Free Press here. The attack on Trump continues. This article headlined "The Deep State Targets Trump." It's not just the deep state, is it?
Well, I think that's the key point, Mike. Pat Buchanan. Days when he was a speechwriter, so he's a veteran of the Beltway intrigue. And Buchanan is especially adroit here at explaining exactly what's going on. And I would preface the remarks by saying there's basically what amounts to a civil war going on, or at least beginning to happen. A civil war, by definition, being when one or more factions fights for control of a single government. And the Obama-Clinton faction and the deeper state that that's an extension of hasn't really left Washington altogether, even though Trump is for instance talking about the neoconservative Bill Kristol. When General Michael Flynn was forced to resign as national security advisor, Buchanan wrote, Bill Kristol purred his satisfaction, and Kristol was quoted as saying, if it comes to it, I prefer the deep state to the Trump state. And Kristol, the neocon editor of the Weekly Standard, should know. He's a longtime member of the deep state, including with the think tank, the American Enterprise Institute, which does have at least some marginal Bilderberg links. So what Buchanan is pointing out here is to Mr. Kristol and those of his ilk, the permanent regime, not the elected president and his government, is the real defender and rightful repository of our liberties. And I think this is the perspective that best explains what's going on. And so this is an important article. People can check it out at American Free Press. But it really gets to the point, the crux of the matter. And that's why I wanted to bring this forward.
We will just mention that we do seem to be having
a little bit of trouble.
Today. I do apologize for that. We seem to have a slight problem going on. Let's just mention that Michael Flynn, of course, resigned as National Security Advisor, has been replaced by Herbert McMaster, who is a Lieutenant General with the United States Army. We don't know too much about him yet, Mark, but my understanding is, well, I've been told by other friends in the United States that, well, they described him as a good guy, but so far we don't know too much about him.
Yes, I don't either. I just heard this last night. I've been busy here in South Texas covering border issues with a lot of congressmen, U.S. congressmen, coming to my neck of the woods. So I'm just getting up to speed on that as well, Mike.
And we will just move straight on then to this article in the Financial Times, Donald Trump and the Siege of Washington. This is a absolutely amazing article. It's by Edward Luce, and he is the son of Baron Luce, by the way, so real British establishment. He was a conservative MP and a member of the conservative government at one stage. But this headline here in the FT, Donald Trump and the Siege of Washington, is subheaded, Will the System Bring the President Down or Will He Destroy It First? The rhetoric is really amazing. Either the forces that are against the president will bring him down or he will destroy the system. My bet is on the first. He said that Trump has declared war on the intelligence agencies and the media. He said, do not be reassured by Mr. Trump's cabinet. Many of them are experienced individuals. He said that he fears it's only a matter of time before this all results in violence. It's hard to predict how long it would take to resolve a battle between Mr. Trump and the so-called deep state. It's also hard to say how long a Republican Congress could stand the heat. At some point, this will boil down to a choice between Mr. Trump and the US Constitution. Well, there were protests in Plymouth about Trump last night, mainly because the Parliament was, as we mentioned on yesterday's news, Parliament was debating whether or not Trump would be allowed to come here for a state visit. At the end of that debate, Alan Duncan made a statement, and he said that the visit will go ahead. He said, the visit should happen, the visit will happen, and when it does, I trust that the entire United Kingdom will extend a polite and generous welcome to President Donald Trump. Well, of course, that isn't going to happen. How can it happen when the BBC in particular, mainstream media in general, are ramping up public angst about Donald Trump? And I think the irony here is that the protesters, most of whom in the past, because of which political side of the political spectrum they're coming from, most of these protesters that are protesting against Trump have in the past demanded a sort of non-intervention policy, particularly in the Middle East. But yet they're quite happy now to come and do the government's bidding and join a protest being incited by George Soros and Barack Obama. As you say, Mark, you mentioned Barack Obama. Well, let's bring him in and bring in this organization, OFA. This is the organization, so it's called Organizing for Action. Go and have a look at the OFA website. It is fascinating. It's pure Saul Alinsky. They say the OFA is committed to mobilizing and training the next generation of progressive organizers and leaders, because real lasting change doesn't happen on its own. It requires a program, it requires organizing, and it requires people like you. With grassroots chapters in neighborhoods across the country, OFA volunteers are building this movement from the ground up, person to person, community by community, because democracy isn't a spectator sport. This is one of the key organizations that's behind the anti-Trump protests. George Soros, we've mentioned, but this is absolutely the office of Barack Obama. So how do we know that? Well, Organizing for Action is the successor of the Obama 2012 re-election campaign and of Organizing for America, which itself succeeded the Obama 2008 campaign. It was set up by its current chairman, Jim Messina, who was the 2012 campaign manager for Obama, and also Michelle Obama was one of the founders of this organization. This is right in the heart of the Obama organization, what's left of it following his presidency. And their view is that, of course, they've done so much for change. They've got to continue that change. They've got to keep working for it. And the first change that they seem to be demanding, Mark, is that Donald Trump is removed as president. From what you've said to me earlier and what I'm hearing from other people, it sounds like there is effectively a shadow government in place.
Hope I'm coming through okay. It's interesting that Mr. Luce would be the one saying this. He was moderating a lot of discussions at the Global Cities Forum last July at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And the Financial Times that Mr. Luce writes for is a key Bilderberg member of Parliament, that unofficial Politburo around the world. And Messina, in fact, was a Bilderberg attendee. These are at least worth footnotes. And yes, as I described, quoting Mr. Buchanan's column on the American Free Press website, it's not the Trump regime or presidency against the deep state and the media. It's the media and the deep state against Trump. Luce has it exactly backwards.
Perhaps I could just add a bit there, but of course the deep state controls the press, and we're starting to see this more and more in UK. Interesting comment somebody's made in our chat box while we're speaking is that effectively Obama is following the Blair type policy. So Blair, former British Prime Minister, but he's now come out of the woodwork to say he's going to help change the minds of the British public, because of course they made the wrong decision by voting for Brexit. And you've got Obama. I learned from YouTube, I don't know whether it is correct or not, but I learned from YouTube last night that Obama is renting a very large house, which appears to have been filled with his staff members. I don't know whether you can add anything to that or comment on the accuracy of that report, Mark.
No, not right offhand. I cannot, Brian. I'd have to look at that more.
Okay. Right. Sorry. We're having technical problems today. We'll just get through this as best we can. But Mark, we have to mention this article. You wanted to bring this in. Russiagate, Washington Post on the warpath to derail Trump's Russia detente. This is from 21st Century Wire. Give us the background to this.
Well, our partner, Patrick Henningsen at 21st Century Wire, of course, is posting some really good stuff. The key point here is the Washington Post is innocuously calling news. What the Washington Post calls news is actually leaked claims from anonymous U.S. intelligence officials, and these leaks are then fed to the mainstream media. Yesteryear, just recently, this would have been declared an improper or even secrets. And yet now it's done routinely. But the key point of this article, in my view, is that while the Washington Post in the Nixon administration was calling Watergate a terrible thing and was saying that Nixon was the deep state, in fact, what this article is bringing out is that even back in the 1970s, during the Watergate scandal, which is the big claim to fame for the Washington Post, even back in the 70s, it appears that the Washington Post was doing then what it's doing now, posing as a great journalistic savior of America, but in fact is part of the deep state as opposed to exposing the deep state. So this is the key point here in this posting at 21st Century Wire. I would urge viewers and listeners to go check this out. And it's a very, very important article because it's giving the true face to the Watergate scandal, in my opinion. And that, therefore, in the long term, that exposes the Washington Post for what it really is, a weaponized fake news media. And that weaponization and that fake news character goes back decades, not just a couple of years.
Let's move on to Vitaly Churkin, who, of course, passed away yesterday. We're going to say that, you know, offer our condolences to the Russian people and the Russian government on that. He was a sterling fighter for Syria, among other things. Let's just get a quote from him. I would like to ask the honorable U.S. representative, have you found any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, or are you still looking? Now, of course, he was the U.S. government the Russian permanent representative to the U.N. Security Council went up against the likes of Matthew Rycroft, the British representative to the UN Security Council, and the US, Samantha Power, of course. He was always making these types of comments. Now, what kind of response did we get from national leaders worldwide? Well, the Swedish foreign minister offered condolences. The Italian foreign minister said that a handshake with Churkin was worth more than any document. That was the Italian ambassador to the UN. Boris Johnson said this.
Yeah, well, that would be appropriate.
So he has said nothing. The Foreign Office has said nothing. There has been no comment from the British media about this. No condolences sent to Russia from the British establishment. I think that's a bit of a disgrace. Expect anything different, Brian.
Mike, these are not statesmen. I think Justin Walker, when he joins us in a minute, is going to be calling these people fake politicians. They are not real politicians. They're not there for Britain as a nation state. They're there for their own interests, and their values and morality is, generally speaking, in the gutter. So we shouldn't be surprised at all, I don't think.
Absolutely. Now, cannibalism, because cannibalism is a very important thing. We should all know about it. Quite a number of mainstream articles about this today, mainstream media articles about this. I chose the New York Times here. Pass the Fava Beans, a new book on cannibalism, says it's not as rare as we once thought. This is brilliant. This is written by a guy called, a zoologist called Bill Shute. The book is called Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History. And what he's basically saying is that animals eat each other. Humans have done so in the past. We should get used to the idea because we're probably going to have the same thing happening again on what he describes as an epic scale. The media here absolutely promoting this idea. Cannibalism is a jolly book written in a breezy style, but the research behind it is impressive. You might think a book on cannibalism would be upsetting, but in fact it's refreshing apparently. Cannibalism, in fact, restores the journalist for the New York Times. Cannibalism restores his faith in humanity. It's good to know that as regards this particular behavior, at least people are no more horrifying or than any other species out there. That's a fantastic approach to take.
It is. I've got some more content for this afternoon's news about the attack on people's minds. Of course, it stars the BBC and not the New York Times. But this is calculated. This is structured material which is attacking everything. It's attacking our happiness, because this is very dark, depressing material dressed up as fun. And basically, it's attacking society as a whole. It's not accidental. There's no question of this.
It's perhaps not a coincidence that Bill Shute, the author of the book, is a research associate at the American Museum of Natural History. And, of course, that has a long history itself of pretty dodgy dealings. They ran, the third International Congress on Eugenics in the 1930s. So they have a bit of a history of this type of thinking.
Yeah.
Yes. Mark, let's move on to this one then. Congressman hosting immigration roundtable. You mentioned this, you hinted at this at the beginning of the program. What's going on here then?
Well, five congressmen came to South Texas here yesterday. This coming Wednesday, House Speaker Ryan will be here. Other senators have been visiting. I'm living in ground zero of the largest migration of people in recent memory across the Mexican border into Texas. And one of the things that meeting covered was that the numbers in the summer of 2014, and I hope I'm coming through, unaccompanied minor children crossing the Texas border, 67,339. And that included over 17,000 from Guatemala, over 18,000 from Honduras, and over 15,000 from Mexico in that total of just over 67,000. And so unaccompanied minor children. And those unaccompanied minor children from fiscal year 2009 through the end of last calendar year, the grand total is 302,076. And then if you look at family units, you're looking in the tens of thousands as well. And so now there are 1.3 million Salvadorans and 600,000 Hondurans in the U.S. And, of course, illegal aliens, well over 11 million of those. So these are the numbers we're getting as there's this debate down here on what to build the border wall, as it's known, and a lot of very pointed criticism of the Trump regime, saying that he basically wants all immigrants kept out, at least the vast majority of them. There's a lot of exaggeration going on, but the bottom line is these are mass migration numbers. This is an exodus, and no one is exploring the southern border of Mexico that borders Belize and Guatemala and El Salvador. That's being overlooked, plus all the drug running that these people are roped into in order to get all the way across Mexico into Texas. They have to agree to be mules for the coyotes and the drug lords. But these open borders people in South Texas that are castigating Trump and bringing these congressmen in, they paper over that. They look at this exodus and they act like they're all innocent refugees. Many of them, even most of them, are. But to get here, they have to make a deal with the devil and work with the cartels and deliver the drugs. And so even under the best circumstances, these large numbers of people are helping facilitate the drug trade, the cartel drug trade into the U.S. and all that that brings. The real solutions are being overlooked, though, and that's why are these countries in such bad shape? Why are people leaving there in such large numbers? And what's going on with Mexico's southern border with these Central American countries? These are the things that these congressmen are barely acknowledging, if they acknowledge them at all.
Do we have any idea what's happening to these children when they get there?
When they get to the States, yes. most of them go into shelters, Catholic shelters and other charities. Or they're detained by the Border Patrol in tent areas, makeshift tent villages, you might say. And this is going on right in my backyard. So it's a pretty bizarre. Ryan will be here Wednesday, as I noted, on the 20th, that's tomorrow, on the 22nd of February. And it's coming to a head right now. I'll have more updates, but this really will determine whether a much extended border fence will be part of a Trump border policy to bring our borders under control or whether it will not. And this is what the Trump administration is facing with this huge numbers of people, families, and unaccompanied minors, and the very left-wing leaning opposition down here in southern Texas. Although the pro-open borders people in Texas like to portray all Hispanics as believing in liberal immigration policy, when that's not true, there's a very sizable part of the Hispanic community, Catholic and non-Catholic, that believes in much better border security, but the local media and local activists make it sound like all Hispanics have to believe in open borders. It's a stereotyping that's very inaccurate.
Mark, we could have a whole hour simply on this subject, but I find it very interesting that the problems that America is having with immigration, particularly from the southern borders, mimicked by what's been happening in Europe, migration through the European Union, a lot of it coming into UK. And your point is also mimicked here, that basically nobody wants to actually start investigating the migration, what's actually causing the problems. Nobody wants to talk about who's creating the unrest, the wars that are displacing these people. You simply have a focus on the problem of immigration as it hits individual countries, whether it's Turkey or Germany or France or UK, for example. And this is where I think we're starting now to touch on the role of this deep state in creating these problems so that they can then manipulate what happens in day-to-day politics as people try to react to it.
Well, those the parallels on both sides of the pond. Exactly right. The war, the largely Western-sponsored wars on your side of the pond, and what I suspect are CIA black budget operations on my side of the pond that are playing a role in destabilizing Central America and driving these people north, along with existing economic defects in the economic and monetary system that are ongoing causes of mass migrations and dislocations of people. It's a combination of those things, but these are overlooked, and all we look at is the symptoms and not the solutions and the causes.
Sorry, Mike, if I may, I'll just add into that. We did an interview a little while ago with two very interesting gentlemen who were talking about how the culture, how society in Colombia was being changed. And this is the key point that they were making, that agencies, particularly American security agencies, were buried into their country, and they could see links through to the trouble, the gangs, the drug trafficking. And that was causing people to then destabilize and move out of their areas. So I think the evidence is there, but of course we're not seeing any of it coming out in the so-called mainstream press.
Just before we move on, I'll just say again, apologies for the sound problems today. We do have a technical issue which we're just working through as best we can. Let's move on to this then. Bilderberg 2013, Birth of a Global Tax System. Mark, you and I have been talking about this for some time. This article actually on the UK Column website, written by Patrick Henningsen, from a discussion that he had with me at a UK Column event, if I remember rightly. But basically, we've been warning about this this global tax system on its way for quite some time, and suggesting various mechanisms that might come in via, of course, the Panama Papers, absolutely part of that. Today, the European Union has published this. This is the Economic and Financial Affairs Council, ECOFIN. They are responsible for EU policy in three main areas: economic policy, taxation issues, and the regulation of financial services. So you might say that this is the embryonic EU Treasury. They are made up of economics and finance ministers from all member states, and the relevant European commissioners also participate in the meetings, because this is a European Commission body. And there are specific ECOFIN sessions. This was one discussing the global tax system. So they have now agreed a text, which is on screen at the moment, for a proposal on an amended. This is, of course, this is all being driven under the guise of anti-tax avoidance. So this is an amended anti-tax avoidance directive. It introduces rules to help address hybrid mismatches, as they describe it, between the EU and third-party countries. Hybrid mismatch arrangements are arrangements often used by multinational companies or other entities. They make it possible to exploit differences between two or more countries in the tax treatment of financial instruments, and they want to deal with this, and they want to deal with the so-called tax avoidance of big companies. Mark, we've been talking about this for some time. The Council, by the way, is also working on concluding negotiations for the fourth anti-money laundering directive. Both of these directives that they're working on at the moment, there's a certain amount of hypocrisy in this, bearing in mind that although this organisation is responsible for setting the budget, they have never produced any audited accounts.
You didn't want to do that, Mike.
No, but Mark, the oncoming global tax system, have you seen any pressure being built on the other side of the Atlantic on this? Certainly the EU seems to be driving forward with it.
Amid all the clutter of the Trump presidency getting seated and getting his cabinet seated and all the controversy, no, I have not, Mike, not specifically. When an Italian bureaucrat spoke of the fiscal consolidation and the regulatory consolidation and the monetary centralization that would all be part of the ongoing tightening of the EU. And this has went through a number of stages. The Transatlantic Consumer Dialogue admitted that the TTIP treaty brought out by a speaker named Monique Goyen. So what we're seeing here that you're bringing out, Mike, is another step since Bilderberg 2013 through the Panama Papers to this EU embryonic treasury that you're bringing out. These are the logical and expected steps of a Bilderberg-connected consolidation of treasury and monetary apparatuses on both sides of the pond. Toward a much larger consolidation, not only involving the EU itself, but tying the US into it through TTIP.
Well, let's find out what the British government had to say about it. David Gawke, who's the Chief Secretary of the Treasury, said he was pleased that ECOFIN agreement has now just been reached to clamp down on multinational tax avoidance and aggressive tax planning. So that is a typically useful comment from the British government.
And we just emphasise this point, of course, in its existence, the European Union has failed to produce any audited and signed off accounts. So they continue to take money from the British taxpayer. That money is not properly accounted for. It was never properly accounted for, but the British government simply won't talk about it. It's obvious what's going on. I had a conversation with a gentleman last night in which I said several times we are lost for words because the evidence is becoming so clear and so powerful. We don't really know how to put it across.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on to this particular slide, the lie of no money, because I think this is an excellent introduction for Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group. So we've got the BBC talking about the need for hospital cuts, NHS cuts. We've got the BBC talking about the need for cuts in education and schools. And of course, we've been talking about the ongoing cuts to the British military to the point where we no longer have a proper major functioning military. Nobody wants to talk about what's causing this. Justin, what is your comment on this business of money? Are we short of money, or is something else going on?
I'm speechless, Brian. We've just been hearing about economic migration, global taxation. Look, the implementation of sovereign national credit, and for Britain that means bringing back the Bradbury, for United States that means bringing back the greenback dollar. You know, taxation only needs to be applied when you're trying to remove inflationary pressures. We just want simplicity back in our lives. We want solutions, and sovereign national credit is the solution. International settlements. We've got to aim our guns on the core of the problem, and it is the private bankers and the system that they have created of debt creation over the last few hundred years, and it can be removed by historical precedent. It's so simple, and we've just got to do it. Now, you've shown a picture of the hospitals closing, and there was a report today on the news. Now, I will just give you a perfect example of how useless our MPs are at the moment. My MP is Sarah Wollaston. She's the MP for Totnes. She's also chair of the Health Select Committee. Okay, I went to see her in last summer as my new MP, and the first question I asked was, have you ever heard of the Bank for International Settlements? Her immediate reply was, no, I haven't. When I explained to her what it was, she did look somewhat sheepish. Anyway, move on to about a month ago. We've got four local hospitals in and around her constituency. They are small cottage community hospitals, much needed, much loved by the local communities, and they are going to close because the NHS have got to save money. So I wrote her a five-page detailed letter pointing out the Bradbury, the historical precedent, how it could solve all the problems. She wrote back two lines saying, no, I don't agree with this system. We'll just have to agree to disagree. That's it. Now, that was the final straw for me. And as a result, I have now written something which will be available this weekend. And it's called, quite simply, Fake Hope, Fake Austerity, Fake Democracy, Fake MPs, an essay reflecting sadness and disappointment. Is there no one left in the House of Commons with decency, integrity, and honour? I've had enough. I'm totally exasperated by what's going on. If we don't make our move now to restore our country, we've lost it. And as Brian has said before, the submarine is above the surface. We know what's going on. We've just got to get our act together and act together towards the truth.
Justin, thank you for that. Just to give a bit of emphasis to our viewers and listeners today, it's not only your local MP that you've challenged on this, but also Mr. Corbyn and his top tier advisors. Yeah. And they originally had signed an early day motion to bring the Bradbury pound back into existence. So we've got Jeremy Corbyn supporting this initiative. What's he doing now?
This is my problem. I'm on a weekly basis. I've been ringing John McDonnell's chief of staff. She's very friendly, very nice, trying to get this appointment with John McDonnell and his team so we can discuss why they signed the early day motion, what they're going to do now to promote the Bradbury. Now they're in a position to put the Bradbury pound and the precedent of its, you know, sovereign national credit into the central arena so it can be discussed. And they just don't want to meet with us. James Meadway, who is John McDonnell's chief advisor, his background is London School of Economics and the New Economics Foundation. And I'm afraid to say this is all part of the so-called progressive movement. They don't want to look at sovereign national credit. They don't want to look at solutions. They just want to wring their hands saying how bad austerity is and we've got to find fairer ways to tax, etc. These people are deliberately not allowing proven solutions to come into the mainstream arena. And I am just disgusted and very disappointed with Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell that they're just relying on the fact that people won't get to know about the 748, early day motion 748, where they actually called for the resurrection of the Bradbury pound. And as they described in one fell swoop, it would sort all our problems out. So what is going on here? All we can think about, you know, all we can think is that the Crown Corporation, the City of London, have got them in some sort of position where they can't speak out. Something very bad is going on.
Well, that last point, of course, is one that I can certainly pick up on, because we've had local Conservative MP Gary Streeter also simply refuse to answer questions put to him about the state of Britain's defence and the fact that we've had massive cuts to the extent that we're now seeing major problems within British military. A wall of silence from Gary Streeter, a wall of silence from other Conservative MPs on the subject of Britain's continuing integration into the the European Union military system. It does seem as though there's been some unilateral policy within these parties that they must simply stop speaking to the electorate. They can't give a reasoned argument back to people on the streets, so the only thing they can do is say nothing. I think we're beginning to get the lid off what's actually taking place.
Yeah, Mark, you're absolutely right, Brian. You're absolutely right. Now, as you remember, back in November, we, about 520 of us, met at the Winchester Guildhall, and unanimously we passed the Winchester Declaration. And the Declaration falls into two parts. The first part is to restore the rule of law by restoring trial by jury for every trial, okay? So the corporate means of trials, like, you know, using statutes and all those sort of things, don't come into the equation. It is all about trial by jury. You are basically examined by your peers to decide whether your actions were reasonable and unreasonable. And the key change that we've got to make, well, it's not a change, it's just making sure the judges tell the jurors that they have this power. And that is the power to annul bad legislation passed by Parliament. We've just had the judgment over Brexit by the Supreme Court that's saying that Parliament is, you know, basically Parliament is sovereign. I'm sorry, Parliament is not sovereign. We, the people, are sovereign. And it is this right to annul by a jury bad, poor legislation that makes sure that we don't suffer from ambitious politicians who are serving their interest and other vested interests at our expense. So that is the first half of the Winchester Declaration. The second half, we've already touched on, is the restoration of sovereign national credit and, in our case, the Bradbury pound. Now, these two things will completely collapse the whole City of London, Crown Corporation conspiracy, if you like, if you want to call it that, what they are doing to us. It will completely collapse their attack against us. So what we've got to do, and I think you're about to show the slide of Robin Hood, at Nottingham on April the 22nd, that's a Saturday, April the 22nd, where we're going to have, if you like, Winchester Part 2. Only this time it's not going to be just a long presentation saying what's wrong. It is a case of us all coming together, meeting ourselves as friends, as fellow campaigners. We're going to have workshops. We're going to empower people with ideas. Other people will come with ideas. The whole point is going to be a traditional moot. We're calling it the Great Moot of Nottingham. And it is, as I said, a coming together of people to basically bring about an effective grassroots movement. We're going to organize hubs. We want to set up hubs in their towns and their communities. We're doing is getting the evidence out to the people, because at the moment the British people are wading through a sea of ignorance. And once they realize the truth about what's happening to them, well, you know, I was talking to some friends only this weekend, and we all agree if we get the truth out, I say we as our mindset, the people who want to go where truth is and solutions are, we should be in power, in inverted commas. Words, our mindset will.
Excellent. Okay. Did we show a picture there?
We
did. The Albert Hall. Excellent. So that space, which is booked and available for April the 22nd, can take just under 1,000 people. So this is a fantastic opportunity to get people together. And Justin, thank you very much for that update. We'll just give people a reminder that you can pick up more information from the British Constitution Group website. And Justin has more information on that going up today. Justin, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay.
And we've also got another meet coming up. This is organised by David Scott, Northern Exposure. He has got Gilad Atzmon coming to Glasgow. That's on March the 30th at 7 o'clock in the evening until 9:30. That's £10 for a ticket, pre-order ticket, £7. So if you're north of the border or within travelling distance, of course, David Scott would really like to see you. Well, let's come on to the subject of fake news. Just a recap, we covered this story yesterday. This is the Mail astonishing claims, it said, with respect to former Prime Minister Heath being accused of being a paedophile. Astonishing claims. This was the journalist, Simon Walters. And what did we pick up on his article? Well, his headline was, "Is he guilty? Yes, I'm sure." That's the stunning verdict of Wiltshire Chief Constable. But when you went into the article in two separate paragraphs, that was absolutely untrue because there was no direct quote from the Chief Constable. So we said effectively this was spin, this was skewing the article. But I'm now beginning to think we're looking at fake news. The Daily Mail simply refuses to discuss the matter. And despite repeated phone calls, I can never speak to a journalist or an editor. And of course, nobody calls me back. But on it goes, because here we've got the 20th. This is the Mail, of course, group of women who say they were abused by Sir Edward Heath, also claim their parents ran a satanic sex cult that was involved in 16 child murders. And if you get into the article here, the bias by the reporter, Rebecca Camber, is astonishing. People coming forward talking about serious abuse and murder. This is what Melanie Shaw came forward to talk about. And look at the language used by this reporter. It's a farce. It's incredible. It's seemingly far-fetched. It's bizarre. It's just allegations. It's lurid. It's just claims. She's done no investigation, but she's already lining up to close the case down. I couldn't find this lady. This is a part of her Twitter page where she's put two tweets, 19 following. But who is this woman? I don't know. And what does this reporting do? Well, here's part of the Mail's report. The godson of Sir Edward Heath reacted angrily yesterday after it was claimed that the police chief is 100% sure. There's the 120% sure. This is spin by the Daily Mail. So, Justin, just very quick comment on this. There's something going on with regard to these child abuse cases. The establishment simply does not want to report.
Well, I think you and I have talked about this often enough, that child abuse, organized paedophile rings at the establishment level, this is the cement that binds the treason, binds the criminality, and gets politicians at a senior level to basically go where lies and wars and, yeah, I'm just sickened by the whole thing. Parliament is rotten to the core, Brian. It's absolutely, truly rotten to the core, because even so-called good MPs, they're not doing anything. They hide behind this damn silly protocol where they say they can't interfere in another politician, another constituency. In other words, if you write to somebody and you're not a constituent, they say there's a protocol which forbids them from discussing it. This the whole place is rotten to the core. And you know, when our mindset takes over, we've got to redo the whole thing. It's all rotten to the core.
OK, thank you for that. Now, we've just got a couple of subjects which will allow us just to bring in Mark again before we get to the close of the programme. This was alerted to me. It's BBC material. It's called The Social. This is a product north of the border. I'd encourage people to go and see it. It is utterly appalling. The embedded information I've got there is a video clip where a person is Are they a boy or are they a girl? That's had 29 million views. There's only one thing this BBC creation is designed to do, which is to basically be unsettling people. And if I just bring this one in top, if you want to see the language, I'm not going to repeat the wording. It's there at the bottom of the picture. But this is supposedly ordinary people speaking, and the BBC is churning it round. Well, it linked into this one, Maker Assembly. And I had a look at this. This smacks of Soros to me. I don't know who funds it, but there's something very weird. This is about community activism. It's being driven by who? Well, it's being driven by the British government via collaboration with the British Council. And we've talked about the British Council before, but I encourage people to go and have a look at them. Soft power in over 100 countries. This is the base of the City of London, I would suggest, putting soft power out throughout the world. You can see the information here on their own website. But basically, this caught my eye this morning because I found that they're still saying that we should be in the European Union. But of course, this organisation describes itself as apolitical and independent. But here it is. Soft power is crucial to countering extremist ideologies. So we've got political language. And if we put it together, it's very interesting. They claim to be apolitical and independent. They are pushing European policies. Here's Erasmus to get university students moving across borders. They have their people with all sorts of former connections, international banks, high finance, corporations, wealth, wealth creation for children, from children. I found this particularly disturbing, but on it goes, transforming national education systems, prosperity and transforming national education systems. It was the prosperity is the one I was after there. LinkedIn, of course, with BBC and BBC Media Action, and they're preventing terrorism. But they told me on the phone they are not political, they are independent, and it was simply a mistake that that reference to the European Union was there, so they're removing it.
Good. Okay. Well, I think we should leave it there.
Indeed.
Yes.
Mark, we are seeing a very comprehensive training program to bring particularly young people into so-called activism, not only in UK, but worldwide. The British Council is one of those things. In America, you're seeing Alinsky-type change activism around Hillary Clinton and Obama. Again, this is not accidental. Just give us 20 seconds on your thoughts.
Well, my main thoughts on what you just got done saying, Brian, you can't avoid this, and I think Justin would agree too. These are the people that refer to common sense solutions like sovereign national credit. I write about a particular application of that known as social credit or economic democracy. Pretty much the same thing, birds of a feather. Real solutions are looked at as extremism, and this constant collaboration and pie in the sky ideas of these people is looked at as reasonable, as humane, as workable. In fact, they are the extremists, the ones that want to be gender benders all the time and tell boys that they're girls and tell girls that they're boys, bending gender, undermining the people's will to influence the government, and constantly forcing unnatural flows of migration and internationalism. They are the extremists. They are the people that are out on the fringe, and their media is part of that, the media that's associated with this Alinsky style, this Alinsky worldview. They are the extremists. That's what people across the board have got to get into their minds. It is not those that want a trial by jury, sovereign national credit, and a government that responds to the reasonable will of the people. They are not the extremists. It's these others, these internationalists, that are the true extremists.
Mark, thank you very much for that. We live in very dangerous times, but information coming to the surface. That's it for today's UK Column News. Thank you all very much for joining us. If you're not a subscriber, please subscribe. We can only do what we do with your help. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.